Well, hey, everyone, welcome to the Gundam Explained Show Live. I'm your host, Adam Blue, and joining us is Steven, the great Midnight Hatter. What's up, man?
Not a lot, man. I am buzzing because tomorrow is opening day of the Gundam Base Mobile Tour here in town. Oh, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out tomorrow, but I'm definitely going to be there Saturday. So
that is cool. I kind of wish there was like something I could get. You know, I might just go to Hobby Town and pretend, you know.
There you go. Well, so that was one of the things that was interesting to me is I was like, okay, so they're going to have the 6-foot Gundam statue at the Gundam base. And I was like, well, they already have the 6-foot Gundam statue at Hobby Town as part of like the Bandai flagship store.
Yeah.
So I was like, what, are they just going to push it outside?
See, that's cool. That's why it's pretty cool that you've got that place over there. But also it's interesting because that's then made the competition harder, you know.
Yeah.
But that's kind of cool because that means you have like people around, you know. Yeah, that's why I have to go to my local comic shop and propose something that I'll run. You know, I keep saying that, but I'm saying it so I can make it a reality.
Like, exactly. It
should be a goal of mine.
Yes. So and shout out to the chat, like hold us accountable to this stuff whenever we, you know, kind of postulate on these ideas like, oh, we should do this type of event. Remind us because.
Yeah. And part of the recent motivation was, you know, from Xionic Shadow.
Yeah.
And, you know, because he was on your show recently and we were talking about, you know, that stuff, how he has a background in promotion. That's kind of what he does. And it's interesting because he was doing it for a while where it wasn't about him, you know, it was just about the people. So it's pretty neat. You can learn a lot from that aspect. But yeah, so for today's show, the first show of September, where, you know, here in Texas, like the weather is really showing because
really
it was raining. The sun has just finally come out now after the past few days. It has actually been fantastic being outside. I've been doing my walks more because it will be where, like, between meetings at work, I need to go walk. Over the summer, I'm like, it's too hot. I don't need to be out. But now it's like, oh, I just need to get out there, get the fresh air, get some sun. So it's been feeling good. What's the weather like up where you're at?
About the same. You know, it was interesting. It was like as soon as September hit, you know, part of my daily routine is I'll ask my Amazon home device. I'm not going to say her name because I don't want her to turn off my lights behind me. But I'll be like, oh, what's the forecast for today? Because I got to dress my daughter for daycare and everything. And the first day of September, it was like, it's 53 degrees outside. I was like, whoa, it has not been sub 70 here in like at least 6 months.
Wow. That's crazy. I love it though, because I feel like there's a few things that's cool about that. Like, yes, I had my fill of the summer. I'm welcoming, you know, the seasons changing. Usually spiritually, that sometimes feels like there's a change going on with, you know, your mind, and I don't know, just kind of, it's like that spring cleaning, but for the fall, you know, for your mind or whatever.
The fall is definitely my favorite season. I don't know about you.
I think so. I think it has become that. It used to be summer just because spring break or summer break, I mean, from school. And then it seemed like that doesn't matter. Yeah.
That's like a nurture, not nature type deal.
Well, and then this past couple years, I have really learned that I do prefer, like, I'll be out in freezing before I'll be out in the hot. I think it's just because I can bundle up. And in Texas, it's not as bad cold as it could be. So. So looking forward to it. And then we came off our birthday weekend, pretty much.
I know
that was
even went way too fast.
It did. It was a lot of fun, but yeah, it did come and go too fast. But another thing over the weekend. So if you head over to Midnight Hatter's channel,
hey, I know that guy.
Linked below. Showing off. Actually, let me. Wrong button. Let me. Yeah. So okay, this is to show this. So this is really neat, right? This is, you know, from Zeta Gundam. Go into detail on your show from yesterday. But what's cool about this is when you first showed it to me, and I might have already talked about it, I thought you were showing me something. Yeah, you got from the Gundam base, and I was like, dang, another prop to add to the shelf. But no, not only did you make this, but you have the print available on your Patreon, and your video actually even shows how you put it together and painted it. So. If anyone else wants to try it.
Definitely. Definitely. And I mean, I've been getting requests for them to, you know, just to ship them to people. It's probably a little print wise, it takes way too long to print for it to be you know, viable for me to, you know, print out multiples and ship them out and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if I take this apart, which I can do, and, you know, because it's like all the parts are just like fit in. Yeah. And then I find a way to make copies out of it, maybe using silicone and molds and things like that.
Oh,
then I think maybe that could be one of the first items in the Midnight Hatter hobby store for sure. Between that and like the little capsule that Camille's mom. Yeah.
I love that stuff because on my shelves that I have of like my, I have the different Gundam series, and I love the little extra scale items you can have. And I don't really have much for 08th MS team. The Robot Spirits had a bunch of those little accessory packs. So that's cool. But that's an example of the type of stuff I want to see Bandai releasing more. You know, like the, is it the GM Sniper 2 that comes with the little mobile worker? You know, that's like another example.
Yeah. I know a couple of years ago, now I think it's a couple of years ago, they came out with like the soft vinyl, like the balloons from
Charge
Counterattack of the Rigazi and the new Gundam. Like, now I've seen that someone actually made, at least for the new Gundam version, they made an STL that you can download for free on Thingiverse. I have not tested it yet, but that's one of those things, like, I wouldn't want to print it like solid. I would want it like kind of hollow, right?
Yeah, I would think so for a lot of reasons. One, it's just easier to move around. It's not as heavy. You would think that would be more cost effective.
Mm-hmm.
But no, to look at that a little more, so the G3 gas canister, also known as...
I can't believe this has an entry on the Gundam Wiki.
Yeah.
I wish I'd known about this.
But see, so this is what's funny. I wanted to tell everyone. Can I go back? Yeah. I was searching G3 and Dangjar. Steven's video popped up first. Because, I was wanting to actually do a little bit of research on it. Well, actually, let me go back to...
What's up, guys? So I was conducting my semi-annual...
Ooh, is that what I sound like? Jeez.
No, it sounds really good. Where did I put the... Okay, here it is. Because this was something that was a weapon used by the Principality of Zeon, but it was, like, agreed upon that that's, like, a war crime, can't do that anymore. And then it was used again by the Titans, right? Yeah. Like, since then. And so that's kind of your interpretation is from... that use, which I mean, it could look the same, but
And you know, it goes back to some of the things that I miss about Gundam video games. Like, I wish that there were different sort of missions that you could do in GBO2, where, like, because I remember distinctly the mission in Gundam versus Zeta Gundam, where you're playing through this mission where, you know, Rekawa is escorting all of the Titans officers and they're about to gas a colony, and you have to go in and shoot down the little G3 cast canisters and things like that. And I think that, like, some of the SDG generation games recreate that well. You know, that should be a mode in GBO2, where one team defends gas canisters trying to take out a colony and the other team has to shoot them down.
And not to get off topic, but it is interesting in GBO2 that the game mode they have other than deathmatch is like ace battle. I mean, I'm surprised there's no capture the flag, you know?
Yeah, King of the Hill, like all of those classic, you know, first person shooter modes.
I know, but man, that's another podcast, like, definitely. But So I just wanted to bring that up because I think it's incredible, like, making stuff like this, because I love those things, you know. So that's if you want to talk about what we've been up to Gundam wise, you made a freaking thing.
Nailed
so
it.
Just real quick, talk a little bit about the Gundam things I got into this week. Playing a lot of Gundam Breaker 4, that review went up, which I didn't really know how to go about the review, because I felt like if I am like breaking down things, I feel like this isn't a game that requires me to break down things, because I think it's a very surface level game, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just an easy game to pick up and play. But I think even with that, it warrants a full price game.
I mean, I thought your review was really, really well done. I finally got a chance to watch it yesterday, and I mean, I think that what you've done really well is you know, positioned yourself as saying like, look, I'm a Gundam fan and I'm reviewing this game not only as a Gundam fan, but also as a gaming fan, and like giving it the benefit of the doubt in certain areas, but, you know,
yeah,
contextualizing the review in such a way that it's like, you know, don't go into this expecting like a Souls game,
right?
But it is enjoyable, and it, you know, it, I, like you said, it warrants the full price, and it warrants, you know, if you're a Gundam fan, to play through it.
Yeah, and you know what, I also did that, and that's another thing, like there's obviously a lot of the content I'm coming out with this week has been Gundam Breaker 4. That will change soon. And look, it does well for me and I have fun with it. I mean, that,
even though
that
you skip all the cutscenes.
I know. Yes.
Well, the story is, I don't know. I didn't really.
But that's what's cool, that like for someone like me, like I story could be bad and I'm still going to enjoy the game. But that, and that's the thing. Like, I can't believe how much I've actually been enjoying this more than I thought I would. And I think a lot of it is because there were actual improvements made over the previous ones. And while it doesn't seem like a big deal, I think for me, it then pushes this game more into that, like, at the type of action that I can, like, sit with for a while, you know?
Yeah.
Lots of fun. So the other thing, too, is, and I don't know if this was in other Gundam Breaker games, but it's like, and this could be a whole aspect I don't understand. Like, you buy kits, right? You buy the boxes, you have the kits. But there's not like a thing, and maybe this is on purpose, to where it's like, okay, we'll build this kit as, you know, vanilla. I actually have to go in and just pick the parts, which is fine, but it's more of then, okay, I have to make sure I save this blueprint so that I don't have to like rebuild this again.
Yeah.
I almost feel like there should be slots or some sort of like shelf where you can have your pre-assembled kit. And that's kind of the blueprint thing. But do you know what I'm talking about from...
Yeah, and I mean, in previous games, there wasn't really that type of... I mean, like, I guess you could... No, I mean, the only thing that you could map, like, very easily like that was paint schemes, right? Like, you could take a paint... But I think Gundam Breaker 4 has a better version of that anyway.
Yeah, where it has the presets that you can set, yeah. That's the thing, like, as I'm playing the game, and I said this in the review, where, like, really a lot of the game is the building.
Yeah.
It really is, even if you don't think it is, or even if you have more fun doing the action. The thing with the building, like what I'm doing personally, because it's a personal thing, is like I went and I built the full armor unicorn, like the first real grade. But I built it like it was. I went in to the decals and turned on the decals. I love that you can turn on real type markings. And so I saved it, and I loved that I was able to save that. So it's like, okay, I want to play, but I want to go play as the unicorn. I'm going to go grab that. And plus they make the leveling so easy where it's like, if I want to use certain things, I can just go in and max level, you know, whatever I need to use. So it's just very interesting. This game does everything easy, and it's almost in a good way to where it's easy to onboard and yeah. So, but you haven't got it yet.
No, I still haven't got it yet. I've just been living vicariously through you.
Yeah. But you plan to, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if only because to me, from watching the gameplay videos that like you and Kakarot have put up, I'm like, this looks less grindy than, I mean, obviously the gameplay is going to be grindy, right? But like, it looks like there's more fun to be had in experimenting with parts and combinations in GB4 than there was in GB3.
Yeah.
With Gundam Breaker 3, I felt like I was just constantly chasing parts, and it was like, yeah, all right, I'm going to grind the same level over and over because I want a particular part. But once I had optimized my build, there really wasn't a whole lot of reason for me to change it unless I found a new part that, whereas exactly. Gundam Breaker 4, it's like you different weapons do different things and different parts give you different abilities and things like that. So I think that my biggest complaint with the Gundam Breaker series on the whole, which is, you know, that it's like a grind fest to just get parts, is like they've addressed that in the gameplay at least.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I that's what I love about it. I love like with the unicorn. So this is a good example of the full armor unicorn, because I'm using it. I have an ability that allows me to do the awakening mode, the NTD, where I can then I feel completely different. It's the same thing with like if I use a Blue Destiny that has the exam I like that. And then like, yeah, one time with the full armor unicorn, and this might be something I haven't figured out yet. I changed a part that I no longer had the awakening.
Exactly. Like, I have like the.
Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if through like the upgrading, there's a way where you can move skills. I don't know. But because what I did was, and I think you'd appreciate this if you saw it, it was a full armor unicorn, but its chest was the Zeta chest. It actually looks really good that way. It does.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the tough things. It's like with transforming kits, not even just like the Zeta, which is like a full transformation, but like you said, with the full armor unicorn or any of the unicorns for that matter, it's like if you just swap out one part, you know, it's like you kind of wish that they did go the extra mile and make like different heads for,
for
transformation states.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, that would be just way too much, I think.
Yeah, and that's what I think is neat about where they are with this. Like, even to me, I feel like what they have, the bones of a building a Gundam or building a mobile suit and attaching the weapons for the sake of fighting, I think this is the best they've had that as a platform. That, because even while playing it, I was like, okay, this is starting to feel like Versus. Because I had optimized my melee combat to where I was like juggling in the air, like for going around, like not, you know, and I feel like there is some of this consistency across Gundam games where sometimes they're kind of similar. Like for a while, remember Triangle or Y or whatever would be Vulcan, or no, it would always be a melee for a bunch of games. And that stuff changes. But anyway, the other thing too is, from that, and there will be a full review, I built that Gundam Breaker 4 Gundam from the Special Edition. That's and awesome. It's an entry grade, so that would explain this. But like I remember I was starting to build it. I think I talked about it on your show. I was starting to build it, and then before I knew it, finished it. Even now, though
I will say in your video, like unboxing that, like the box art of this kit is fantastic compared to like the Gundam Versus Extreme one, which was like the plain white box.
Yeah. No, the art is great, especially because the special edition has that steel book with the art on it too. And it's cool because this isn't like typical Gundam art. I think what this really does, it's kind of like speaks of the times where kind of that retro synth wave came back, but it's like kind of past now. But you know, some companies still will utilize that.
Hello, fellow kids. I like synth wave too.
Here's a sunset with pixels, you know, that whole thing. But anyway, what's cool about this, though, is this: the gimmicks speak to the point of this being Gundam Breaker. It's full of these guns, weapons, attachment points. I'm going to talk about it in full in the review of like all the neat parts to it. But the one disappointing thing, and I talked about this in the review of the Special Edition, is the items from the Special Edition all came like just
loose.
Loose. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Sorry. There wasn't like a box. So I was looking online like, okay, are people selling the special edition? And this, so the Japanese version is in a box.
Yeah.
I think for the North America version. Here's the other things too. I really think they probably aren't expecting a lot of sales from this game. To a degree. Yeah. I even think like, it's almost behind the times in a way, but not quite. You know, in terms of like releasing something that's a special edition with the Gunpla.
I miss like big release days like Halo 3 and getting like a Spartan helmet. And, you know, there's definitely something missing when it comes to video game releases now, that even smaller games used to get much more fanfare than they do now, where it's just like, oh, it's a digital release. Like, I can't wait to play it when it's downloaded, you know?
Yeah, because even looking at when I did the video about the Gundam Breaker 4 reviews, it's like none of the big outlets are reviewing this game. It's like, you know, like no one really...
Dude, it's not even like on the featured page of like the PlayStation Store, you know?
Oh, it's not.
I have to go through pages and pages of like, oh, don't forget to download Fortnite this week if you haven't got it already. Don't forget, you know, Rocket League Season 12 or whatever it is. It's like, you know, not in the featured pages, not in like the new games section. It's crazy.
Well, so I've got some numbers and I don't really know, you know, what context to put this in, but this is just Japan and this is just physical. So
physical is pretty cool.
Yeah, on the Switch, 52,000 seems like a good number. On the PS5, 32,000 seems like a good number. What's interesting is PS4 is a lot less, which I find surprising, at 13,000.
Well, if it's physical copies, you know, maybe most people are picking up the digital version on PS4.
Ah, yes.
Because that, if the that special is edition was only PS5.
Because the argument is most people are already in that PS4 ecosystem in the first place. So,
and I know that for my purposes, like, I don't have a PS5. So if I'm getting the PS4 version, you know, and I'm not getting the Gunpla.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if there's not even a physical version for PS4. I mean, a digital, or what am I trying to say?
Well, so I had heard from Goose, if he's in the chat, that on Play Asia, Asian territories did have a special edition version of the PS4 edition that came with the Gunpla. But even then, you know, it's pretty limited finding that. But
that would explain, you know, I think, that, yeah, to a degree then. Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So this is just Japan. So I'd be curious to see what North America is, what their expectations is of this. At the end of the day, best case scenario is this does good numbers for them. And so, let me go to the other thing real quick that's related, if I can find. Yeah, here we go. So they announced that we're going to get the Mighty Strike Freedom Gundam and Gundam Calibarn. But it's weird how they worded it. It's like, we are creating previously unplanned Gunpla to release free. It's like, that. How was that previously unplanned? Like, this we're seeing the actual assets here. This had to be created. And then apparently this was announced August 6th in Japan or something. So it's not like it was previously.
Well, and so the interesting, I mean, just the phrasing of it is like, oh, wow, free Gunpla. But like, you know, obviously it's in game. It's not like you're going to get a free physical Calibarn kit, which I have to say they were loaded up on the Calibarns at Hobbytown when I was there last. So
I'm always thinking I need to grab one because I'll see it and it looks cool. But I just so I would think, though, they would do this. Like, I don't think you come out with Gundam Breaker 4 and not have the Mighty Strike Freedom or Gundam Calibarn on it. So I think this was going to be done regardless.
No, and I mean, like, I can't imagine it would have been that hard to throw together the images of the box art. You know, you're just taking taking a rectangle and putting the textures on. Like, I think it'd be you could do that in SketchUp.
Yeah. But so this is supposed to be free DLC, which is cool. I like it. I guess I haven't played enough to see if anything's been missing necessarily. Maybe the Toads Ritter. Because what I've been doing is the other thing. I skip cutscenes and my filter is anything. I've blocked out anything that's not UC in my kits when I'm building. So it's bad. But I haven't come across anything that I'm like, oh, I can't wait for this. I mean, I got the Gasai Gundam. Have I got the Penelope yet? But a lot of what I'm doing is just like playing it. It's more to really get down the feeling before I settle. And instead of really settling, I'm just building a bunch of Gunpla, saving the blueprints. What do I feel like taking out today? You know, it's interesting because, again, this game, if I want to talk about like video game stuff for a second, like this game is very free form in a way where it's almost like you can't just say this for Gundam Breaker 4. This is this game. This is how it is. Cause I think everyone would play it differently, not only combat, but how they want to build their Gunpla, or if they even care about building the Gunpla, or all they want to do is build Gunpla.
Yeah. I mean, the game really is as well, whatever you want to make of it. Right.
Yeah.
Now we still haven't achieved that perfect Adam Blue vision of the game that you described. Like you said, the vision is so perfectly like vivid in my head as, you know, taking parts as they're coming off of other mobile suits and like snapping them on during,
I know.
Now, I guess you kind of got that in New Gundam Breaker, but like, you know, everything else about that game was terrible. So,
no, but it would be cool. Like, I even think for me, the ultimate Gundam game wouldn't be this out of universe thing. It would be an in universe story. But at the same time, customizing is fun. So you would want, even if it's a strict story, you would still want a degree of customizing. Oh, so here's something that's kind of related is Space Marine 2. If you pre-order the special edition, which I did. You could play it today, which I did. And it reminds me of customizing Gunpla in a way, because the Space Marines, which I have actually a bunch sitting here, like you can change like the colors, the shoulder pauldrons, the little things all around them. And it's that kind of
it's only a matter of time till you get into Warhammer, like the tabletop miniature game and, you know, assembling.
I don't think as much as I think I would, I've liked, you know, Dawn of War more, you know, since that came out.
Yeah.
Never even. Yeah. I can never go to that side. Even as much as we hang out and I've learned about tabletop from you, it has never,
You have to understand there's a whole bunch of people that just build them and paint them that never like I've never played a game myself. But there's that user, Scorn Mandark over on Cults 3D. And they actually sell some of his models on Newtype, newtype.us. He models Warhammer bits that are Gundam.
I think I remember you telling me that.
I got so excited because I saw that he did Ares parts. So like the shoulders from the Ares from Gundam Wing little pilot helmet. Oh man. Finally. Yeah.
Well, see, here's the thing though. Like I could build and paint, and I was looking at one. I picked up one of the things and it was $40.
They're insanely expensive.
But for $28, I could get this fully articulated one. So that's why it's like, it's...
Yeah, that's kind of hard to beat.
And because of the game... See, guys, I get obsessed with things. Here's one of the Tyranid Warriors.
There you go. I'm surprised you didn't get that custom PS5 that's like...
I know, that looked cool, but that's, yeah, too much. But that's the thing, like again, $30, like... I mean, yeah, that could be a lot, but for an adult collector that wants something fully articulated, that's a good price.
No, that's not bad. I mean, if you compare that to things like the Robot Spirits or some of like the SH Figure Arts.
Well, to take away my adult collector card for a second, we were at Target over the weekend and we saw Sonic the Hedgehog 3 action figures. But with my level of knowledge, I'm like, there shouldn't be them yet. They haven't announced them. And sure enough, they haven't. I think some places they came out early, but yeah. I know we're getting sidetracked here. But here's a fully articulated Sonic, like fully articulated. That's fantastic. And then here is a fully articulated Jim Carrey and Robotnik. And it's like they did it. Like the articulation, the sculpt, like the hands.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
I'm telling you, there's people like, okay, Adam's going to Target. Let's have a Jim Carrey Robotnik action figure because we know he's going to buy it.
Yeah, obviously. And you know what? I'm glad you did because my daughter loved watching that review of you.
Yeah, so that's the thing. On the Blue Gamer, I thought every once in a while, if I get a video game related action figure, I might as well review it on there because I have.
You did the Street Fighter ones.
I did a Master Chief one, and that has more views than most of my video game related stuff. But so that's why I decided to do the Sonic and the Robotnik, because I was like, you know, these aren't really widely available yet. Maybe that can get me some hits. But
and you know, it's surprising that there's like actually for as long running and popular as the franchise as Sonic is, you know, I'm surprised that it took the movie. And not even just the first movie, but like the third movie for them to come out with like fully articulated action figures. Like, I think I picked up, you know, some small stuff to like Sonic and Tails things for my daughter because she loves those movies. She's always asking for a Knuckles, and I'm like, I can't find a Knuckles.
They're supposed to be coming out with more now. Yeah, that's the thing. I've picked up a few of the figures before, and they're usually not great, but it's one of those things where like they're made for kids, so they don't put too much detail.
Yeah.
Okay. So next up, let me just show this real quick. This one on sale August 31st, apparently, but it's the Robot Spirits. You know, they're continuing that the Veranime for Zeta Gundam. They've got the Rick Dias. I have both versions. It's Char's, and I wonder if they say this one is a specific pilot or just the standard model.
Yeah.
But anyway, I got them pre-ordered. I'm just waiting for them to arrive because I'm going to do a review of them because I have the original version of the Robot Spirits and I like to do the comparisons to like how much accuracy did they add from the cartoon? Because I just love the idea of things being a version anime.
Oh yeah.
And it's so hard to do that.
This brings up a very interesting conversation that I recently had with Alter, our mutual friend.
Yeah.
Is, you know, they included these bazooka effects that fit into the clay bazooka, which look awesome, right?
Yeah.
And obviously with the clay bazooka, there's different modes associated with it, right? You have like the projectile mode that you saw there where it's like, you know, just the single bazooka shell. But then the clay bazooka that the Hiyakushiki uses sometimes has like a scatter shot, which is used during the fight with the, oh my gosh. All I want to say is Flying Donut because of the memes, but no, the Ashimar.
Yeah.
But apparently the clay bazooka also fires like, you know, the same sealant rounds that they typically will come out of like the finger of.
Oh, interesting.
But I have never seen any representation of that. Not in the anime, not in figures, not in video games.
I know that they, for the Robot Spirits, it has a hand that has the finger down for the sealant, but not coming out of the bazooka.
See, maybe that's one of those like weird Mandela effect things. Like we think that it exists, but maybe it never does.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to look at that because you would think that a lot of these bigger weapons could easily be multi-purpose.
When a lot of times, I mean, it just fires shells. So like you could load it with whatever type of shell.
Yeah. Hey, Lucas Garrett, good to see you. Good evening.
Yeah, good seeing you.
Anyway, I can't wait for these to come in so I can review them and play with them. All right.
Everyone needs desk toys. Like that's a
It's those fidget things, you know? It's a fidget thing and it kind of helps, you know, through work and okay. The other thing I wanted to talk about happens to do with GBO2. So I haven't been playing it because I've just played it so much, but they've got this Fafnir, Fafnir. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not something I'm familiar with. MSZ-009. It's from Mobile Suit Gundam Walpurgis.
Yeah.
And it's actually developed from the prototype Double Zeta and a Gaplant.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely see that. And obviously, the model number is just one below the Double Zeta.
Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely looks like a Gunpla of like a build fighters. Hey, I'm going to take the wing binders from the Gaplant and slap them on a Zeta Gundam type.
Yeah, it looks like that, but it seems to work. Like when I saw the pictures from GBO2, I was like, oh, okay, that's my type of thing because it also evokes a lot of like a classical style Gundam, like, you know, like a Mark II style.
Yeah.
But this is supposed to be more of the Double Zeta.
This goes back to like a conversation that you and I had a couple weeks ago where we were talking about like how some of these more modernized designs that are supposed to fit in Universal Century, you know, sometimes they don't seem to fit like things from Advance of Zeta or things from Moon Gundam, you know, they don't quite match the sort of design technology tree the way that we like. But this, like you said, it's got the look where it's like that. I can see that that is clearly something that could exist side by side with the Double Zeta, right?
Right, yeah, because when you look at things, you could be reminded of other things in UCS. So it's not like far out, yeah, like you were saying with Advance of Zeta, how sometimes those add-on bits or whatever just look like, what's that from? I just always love how big the beam saber handles are. Like, within Gundam, you've seen so many different types. Like, it almost seems like they get smaller sometimes, and then sometimes they're gigantic. You know, I guess that has to do with different degrees of power potentially, but I just think a beam goes through anything anyway, except if it has beam coating, maybe.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like a lightsaber.
Right, yeah.
You know, so I don't know.
I've always wondered about that. Like, you know, they always, it's fun to show like a sword fight where beam sabers are clashing and, you know, but wouldn't they just kind of pass through each other?
Right. Yeah. That's what I don't understand. yeah. I find that interesting. Anyway, no, that's a really cool one. And yeah, like Neon Wave is saying, don't worry. I haven't been playing GBO2 for a while either. Time, frustration, Gunbreaker 4 being released. Loving it, by the way. Started playing after coming back from vacation yesterday. See, that's the thing with GBO2. Like, at the same time, it's like I want to recognize that game has been supported for so long and has had good support. You know, it's not like they just throw crap. It's like there are things that are neat and for fans a lot of times. It's like, whoa, they added that mobile suit? But it's just one of those things where even with me, I sometimes get a fill of something and I'm like, okay, I've had my fill. I'm going to move on. And I've done that with GBO2 before where I've gone like 6 months without playing and then I get back in and I'm full force. But I don't know. I almost feel like that's going to be it.
Well, and I think that they knew that Gundam Breaker 4 was going to impact GBO2. Yeah,
that's a good point.
You know, and I wonder, to your point, you know, this is a game that they've been supporting for so long, like with these weekly releases of new mobile suits now for both the Steam version and the PlayStation version. Like, you know, was there any thought given to, like, A, should we slow down those releases in light of Gundam Breaker 4, or B, you know, the Fafnir is obviously, I mean, they've come out with other manga only mobile suits before, but like, maybe are they going to experiment with other mobile suits that they wouldn't normally release on that schedule?
Yeah. And I wonder if they've almost got to the point where, because they've even had obscure stuff like the Mono Eye Gundam, you know, so it's like, I wonder if it's going to get to a point where, even though there's probably still a whole lot that they could add, you know, eventually they'll slow down. And then so that makes me wonder, like, is the plan to just to always have a next competitive Gundam game? You know what I mean? Like a free to play. It will always be a Gundam battle operation. Or
I don't know. I mean, I don't see the I don't see a reason to create a Battle Operation 3 unless they were going to specifically, you know, overhaul it from the ground up and do the entire thing in Unreal 5, you know, the way that they've been doing their recent games. To continue to iterate on this 20-year-old game engine just for the sake of, like, you know, I don't think that there's anything they could add that would warrant having another version of that, right?
Yeah, I really do think it would be good of them to. And I think in general, when it comes to Bandai's Gundam games, we've brought this up, they need to make it look like they're putting more money into these. You know, Gundam Breaker's cool, it does what it needs to do, but we need a game at the caliber of the IP as it is in anime. There's not, you know, but we could easily have said 20 years ago those games existed.
Yeah, well, you know, I come to think of it, like, how many anime video games truly push, you know, push what the system, whatever they're capable of doing. Like, you know, typically, and I would argue that, like, Dragon Ball Z worldwide is a more popular IP than Gundam.
Yeah.
But even with Dragon Ball Z video games, like, you're really just getting the same 2D fighter mechanics that you see from, like, a Street Fighter. Like, it's just taking a fighting game and reskinning it with Dragon Ball assets, right?
You know what? Good point, because I think the other way that it could be done, and I think I talked about where I was playing a Dragon Ball Z game recently, Kakarot, I think it was called, or something.
Yeah.
Where it was open world. And exactly. So it's like, yeah, it wasn't like it was a high budget game, but it had all the things to be an experience.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that that's kind of what you've been experiencing with Star Wars Outlaws, right? Is that same sort of...
That's another good example, because I don't think the Star Wars Outlaw, like, it's a fun game, but it's not doing anything revolutionary, which Star Wars is known for in filmmaking. It's not doing anything revolutionary, but what they did was, it's like, let's take the best of what works, skin it in Star Wars, allow you to be Han Solo, pretty much, even though it's a girl, I mean, it's the same thing, going into, like, an Imperial base, stormtroopers everywhere. I guess that is what I want to get from a Gundam game. Gundam Breaker would be that if for you, the Build Fighters was your Gundam universe. You know what I mean? So, but I want to play a game that I feel like I'm in. It's like if Gundam Battle Operation 2 had a more kind of like open endedness to it.
Yeah. I mean, what Code Fairy, you know, could have been, but I mean, I still loved Code Fairy just for the sake of like, I mean, I think that what it did with the Gundam Battle Operation formula was perfect.
Yeah. It's like the best that can be done with those aging technologies, engine type graphics, but still top tier stuff.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Oh, here we go. Do you think Bandai should get that guy who was at Capcom for 30 years? That's interesting. So the guy that's been involved with a lot of popular Capcom games, including Dragon's Dogma 1 and 2, decided to move on to do his own things. And that's a neat... Gregory? I don't know if I'm saying your name right. Zurkov. Mr. Zurkov. I try to be respectful. Brings up a really good point, because that's something I haven't even talked about in my Blue Gamer news things, is that main guy from Capcom. DMC52, thank you. That's an example of, like, right now where, like, the video game industry is kind of like, what do we do? That's where an Xbox or Sony grabs that guy, and they're like, okay, help us lead the creative output of the game.
But they have to manage that relationship really carefully, right? Because there's a reason that these, these veterans of the industry are stepping away from big companies, right?
That's right.
And so they don't want to get right back in bed with another big company. And so what...
You're right.
What someone would have to do at one of these large organizations is give them the autonomy, the funding, and give them the final say on what to deliver. But that's the thing, and this is why that's such a big deal, is that Capcom has always been, as far as publishers go, like they're one of the ones that delivers what fans want. Consistently, right? Very few people have complaints about Capcom the way that they do about like Konami and Ubisoft. Like,
it's it's very interesting. But you bring up a good point. Yeah, these people that have this pedigree and they have the resources and ability to make things that don't need the resources from a corporation are going to want to be able to do things on their own. Because you're seeing that a lot late. I mean, look at Kojima, look at Koji Igarashi of Castlevania fame. That's what Shinji Mikami and why am I forgetting the other guy's name with Platinum Games? The guy with the glasses that blocks people on Twitter all the time. Get his name, but he's another one too. It's like that's why it's interesting where you see Nintendo having the same execs for a while, because they just do things so different anyway,
I hate so much sounding like a Nintendo fanboy, but like there's so many things to appreciate about the way that Nintendo runs their business. Obviously wish they wouldn't come down on fans so hard for
it's interesting, and it could be because they're both Japanese, but I think the way Nintendo is with their games is kind of how Bandai or Sunrise is with the Gundam IP, I think, where there's this degree of respect, even if that means they're missing the mark in some things because they're trying to.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that maintains that integrity is because they crack down on fan projects that way. Is like if they were more liberal about the way people used their IP in different ways, then you would see the same kind of the watering down of their properties, right?
It's almost like how Warhammer has all these video games, mm-hmm. and sometimes they're good, but sometimes they're just like, you just slap, the IP on here. And so, and that's interesting, because how much of that has actually been a detriment to Warhammer if a game happens to be crap when there's a game that's really good too?
Yeah. I mean, there's I guess opposing schools of thought, right? It's like either you have tons of content and it's a hit or miss, whether it's good or bad, or you have like a strict, funnel where all of the content has to pass through, very strict auditing process. But then even then,
yeah,
you know, as a result of whatever forces are at work, it's like sometimes that one piece of content is terrible. And it's like
that. It's like Concord with that new PlayStation game Concord. I can't believe they shut it down after 8 days.
Look, I will say it, like, I think that it has the same problem that Gun Evo had. The difference is that Gun Evo was backed by an established IP. I think that if Gundam Evolution had not been a Gundam game, if they were just trying to make a sci-fi hero shooter out of the gate, it was gone. Like,
I completely agree. That's very interesting. And so I think that was the trouble with Concord. It's like, what was I going to play? Oh, and it's almost like a lot of times these publishers are being like, hey, kids, it's a FPS. Like, really, where then they're showing me all these characters. It's like, why do I care?
I mean, I feel like those kind of like sci-fi shooters these days, it's like they're a dime a dozen. Like, everybody's making the next. they're trying to
be careful. Yeah, like a Gears of War or something. So it's like you got to be careful with how.
And if you don't have like very unique designs, like those games, they live or die on the art direction. And so if you have, and this is the same problem that I have with a lot of like newer Gundam series, is that the designs are not sticky enough to where it's like, you know, they have that iconic, long lasting RX-78 look, right?
Yep.
And so the more kibbly and, you know, over rendered these sci-fi designs get, typically, you know, I know that it looks realistic and like, oh, it's cool, it's got all these parts and pipes and things on it, like it looks real, and then it's like it's just muddy looking, it doesn't it's not, it's visually visual appealing.
Nothing you can really lock on to really that stuff is interesting. Mr. Zirkov is saying, you know, Sony has IPs, IP problems is that, oh, okay, IPs. Problem is that Sony doesn't seem to know how to use their old IPs. And that's crazy because even my train of thought, like sometimes people are like, well, the IP isn't that popular anymore. It's like, that's fine, but it has that up over a new one. And if you can make an old property work again, then you have that back catalog that you can utilize. It's like a legacy thing. That's what I was thinking with DC and like the Zack Snyder. Even though they're moving to this new universe, I think it's worth still establishing content in the other universe if you can, because that will then always be accessible. And then that's more content.
Especially when you think about, and I don't know why this popped up on my Instagram feed, but Matt Damon whining about like, well, you know, the reason that movies aren't good anymore is because DVD sales aren't a thing anymore. And it's like, you know, first of all, I think that that's a terrible excuse. But, you know, to address that point, like when it comes to old content that's not available to download anymore, how do you get people to buy it? Well, you have to create new content that promotes it, right? Like one of the reasons that people are going back and playing old Sonic games now is because of the Sonic movies. And so it's like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, come on, like give us a new Crash Bandicoot game, a new Gex game. Like I think that those types of things would be fantastic. And I think that they would bring something new to the table that we haven't seen. Well, recycling new ideas that we haven't seen in a while. Like the idea of, I remember it was revolutionary Crash Bandicoot coming towards the screen instead of running away from it. Like,
I know.
Recontextualizing platformers.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of goes back to, you know, what I was saying earlier about like Gundam and video games, like Star Wars kind of revolutionized filmmaking. I think Gundam revolutionized storytelling, realistic storytelling, even though it's an anime. I think that still even works in live action. You know, there's a lot of good ideas they have there. And so that's where I think Gundam could push, you know, it's because they have done this before in the past, the games, the stories they've had, the way they've made the games feel like you're in a robot. Because let's be honest, in Gundam Breaker 4, you don't feel like you're in a robot. But at the same time, that's not necessarily why people are playing Gundam Breaker 4. It's about the Gunpla, you know, it's a very interesting little thing. And so I guess you got to appreciate Bandai for navigating how they market, you know, the kind of that balancing act of Gundam. There's the Gunpla, there's the anime, you know, it's pretty good. Even though I might complain about something. but that's just part of being a fan.
Yeah, and I think that that's an important thing to remember, is it's like, you don't have to consume everything that comes out from that IP. Like,
yeah,
whether it's Gundam, whether it's Star Wars, like, you know, let the let the cream rise to the top. And
yeah, exactly. Well, okay, then speaking of other IP real quick, as we get near the end of the show, I've been watching that Terminator anime.
Oh yeah, I haven't checked that out yet.
It is really good. It even does something that I think, because it adds more lore.
Yeah,
you know, and it adds more. There's more discussion about the time travel. Because think about this, like in the Terminator franchise has to do with time travel, and so the movies will have situations where recurring characters are doing things in different times. You could almost have infinite stories told in Terminator about, because the time travel can just make it where nothing ever.
Isn't it wild that, you know, Terminator is one of these movies that uses time travel as a very important plot point, but they have not even touched the surface about like all of the types of different, you know, impacts that traveling through time can have. Like, you know, you look at something like Back to the Future, where the time travel is the main point.
Right.
And, you know, you're talking about like all these different paradoxes that could occur in Terminator. Like after Terminator 2, maybe Terminator 3, like everything to do with time travel was just out the window. And it's like, oh, it's all action movies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So
unless they've done this before, I feel like a very compelling story for Terminator would be, again, or something where, okay, John Connor, you have to go back, you have to go in time, like somewhere in time to fix something, to stop the robots. And I like the idea of John Connor coming across like an older version of him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know it. And he almost like explains to him, like the time he comes from is probably the best case scenario, because no matter what, the robots will always destroy humanity. So it's like, yeah, just live the rest of your timeline, because it's better than the others. Like something like that. You know what I mean? Where as an audience member, you know, this is just the Terminator story, the robots. And because time travel's involved a lot, it makes you think, okay, well, then maybe there's no way to get around that. Kind of like the Time Machine movie plot.
Yeah. Great, great movie. Like,
yeah.
Just, I mean, even so, you could apply that same thought process to what happens in Terminator, right? Is it's like the only reason that they built a time machine in the first place was to try and stop this thing. So therefore, that loop can't be broken.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think that's interesting. It's watching the Terminator anime. It has come to me, made me think how you were talking about time travel uses plots in movies. They haven't really fully embraced it in a way that could make the storytelling interesting. It's almost like they're using it as an excuse to tell a story.
Yeah. And you can tell that, like, that's the extent of their creativity, because every film has just been, let's push the boundaries of what the Terminator can do.
Yeah. First, the new ability. Robot,
now it's liquid metal. Now it's like liquid metal, but she can make, like, you know, complicated.
Oh, machinery. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
You know, it was like, it was always like, how can we push the T-1000 to the T-1200 to the T? Yeah. It's like, you guys are missing the exciting part about telling a story about time travel.
Yeah. So even though, yeah, time travel is mentioned, I think one of the cool other themes they have in this Terminator anime is there is, I wouldn't necessarily say competing, but like there's different social medias, there's different Skynets before they become Skynet. And so then there's like this thing where there's conflicting AIs, there's other robots that are not built by, isn't Cyberdyne? I think it was an episode of the podcast where we were trying to figure out the name of the company.
Cyberdyne.
Yeah. It does a lot of really cool things. So I recommend that, now that I've been very open to watching like anime, and Terminator is that type of anime that I like. It has blood, it has robot stuff. It's even scary. You know, the way in the Terminator movie, they had him slowly chasing, you know, they do that here and it's done very well.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Neon Wave, as long as we don't talk about Terminator Genesis, we're good. Yeah, it gets to a point where I forget what the movies were.
Yeah, Genesis and Dark Fate, like, we just, let's, well, even that other one with Christian Bale, like, that one was dumb, too.
I know. Like, that, I remember Terminator 3, I remember when I saw that, and I was like, all right. And then, yeah, the one with Christian Bale came out, and I was like, oh, they're ruining this, aren't they?
Yeah.
Even though it's like, it's funny, because each movie still has neat things. But then it's like, after I watch him, it's more of, okay, now I'm not interested anymore. Kind of like what recent Star Wars did with me, where I'd be done watching these Star Wars shows, and I'm like, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, not, eh. So.
But see, this is why you need to finish your playthrough of Mass Effect 2, because, you know, with the, especially Mass Effect 2 and 3, with like the whole Geth storyline, because, you know, you start to learn how the AI revolution happened on their planet. And so
that's neat.
And just the way that they handle it is very interesting, too.
Okay. So are these games like more than 20 hours a piece? If I'm going to want to get through the story.
Kind of, yeah.
It's interesting because I will put a lot of time in games. Usually it's when I don't expect to.
Yeah, and I think that along with a lot of other type of RPG games, you know, Mass Effect, that as a series, is one of those games that's like, you get in what you put out, or get out what you put in.
Oh, okay, I see.
You know, like, if yeah. you decide to talk to characters and explore their backstories, then you'll kind of tease out more missions and story, but like, you don't have to talk to them if you don't want to. Like, it's...
Yeah, that's, you know, that's interesting, because that reminds me how Star Wars Outlaws is doing the stories and the missions, because it's kind of like built in. Because, like, if you you meet someone new, usually you'll get upgrades out of that. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of interesting how it embeds it. So that's, yeah, another. Oh, here we go. From Neon Wave. I love fun facts. Salvation had an alternate ending where John dies and the human Terminator hybrid took his face to assume his identity to lead humans to victory as a way to redeem himself of his past. That's interesting. Okay. So there could be interesting stories. Anyway, that's about it. That's it for today's episode. Had a lot of fun talking about stuff. I think the biggest takeaway is Gunbreaker 4 is a lot of fun. I'm going to still be playing it.
And of course, Gundam Seed, the entire, all of it is on Netflix.
That's like one of the things, whenever's like, where do I watch Gundam? Even though I don't recommend Seed first, you can watch Seed and the other
Destiny
one.
There too.
Yeah. So,
the soul two Destiny fans, here on the show. So,
I think that's about it. So yeah, everyone, thanks for tuning in. Check out, I guess, watch out for Steven's stuff, because you might have updates from the Gundam base.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'll be posting stuff all weekend. So
cool. All right. Well, everyone, thanks a lot. See everyone later. Have a good one.
Cheers. Thank you.